Today I want to ask the questions, are you using your emotions or are they using you? And the context for this is a convenient scale that I use that I refer to as the 10 emotional states. They go from low to high. So today's talk is going to be centered on some of these ideas. If we start at the lowest level of emotions that I'm going to talk about on a scale, I would start at shame, and above that is apathy. People recognize that as depression. Above that is grief. Above that is fear. Above that is lust. Above that is anger. And above that is pride. So those are the first seven. Easy to remember. Shame, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, and pride, because they the first letters are SAG, S-A-G, F-L-A-P, FLAP, and the final three are courageousness, acceptance, and peace. Those would be the goals that we would be seeking in our daily activities, that when we relate to something, when we put our attention on some object, concept, person, thing, situation, we would be in one of those top three. So SAG, FLAP, CAP are relatively easy to remember. One of the ideas is that if we know which emotional state we happen to be in, it is very helpful because we're going to process information differently depending on the emotional state. And if we're talking to somebody else, their emotional state is really important to us because it's important to the way they process information. Somebody at a lower level is not going to be processing the information the same way they would be when they are feeling much better about themselves and lives, when they're at a higher emotional state. There are a lot of ways to look at emotions, and I bet if you Googled it, you'd come up with a gazillion different results in that search. But what is commonly known or spoken about in self-improvement circles is the idea that emotions is really defined as E plus motion. That is energy in motion. And I think that makes a lot of sense. These emotions, as long as they're moving, and we know they come into our awareness and we experience them and then they move on, I think is much healthier for us than say, I don't want to feel that, I don't want to feel that. And we get trained in that, of course, because people, when we were younger, will say to us, oh, don't feel that way. That didn't really hurt. That's not as bad as you think or feel. And it's like, wait a minute. These things are completely subjective. So however you feel about it is how you feel about it. And that really is the starting point as compared to somebody else's opinion about what we're experiencing or feeling being more or less than what we're actually judging it to be. In certain religions and certain families and certain, I think, even cultures, is this idea of emotions. Feelings. No. I don't want to feel my feelings. That's bad news. So they are oftentimes feared because they are thought to be less than thinking. No. This is all about intellect. My mind, my thinking is dominant. And this ought to be the total aspect of me that I represent to the world, and I don't want to feel anything. Feelings are, they're for sissies. Girls feel, boys don't feel. And I was having a conversation the other day with someone, a woman in Germany, and we were talking about this, and then later in the day I was having a conversation with a German man, and both agreed that, you know, culturally, German men are taught not to feel and only to think. So everything has got to be rational, logical, and it can all be calculated and figured out. So it's one thing to be feared, you know, emotions. This is a sign of weakness. It's another thing to have them demonized. So that really shows up in certain religious patterns of thought. No, feelings and emotions, that's the devil, and you got to keep those things under control, and you know, because otherwise they'll make you do really, really bad things. So the question a person needs to identify, I think, is, have you been trained to believe that your emotions are your enemy, or are your emotions your ally? If we could understand emotions and recognize that they are such a part of life, human beings feel those things, and frankly, looking at my puppy, I would say she feels things too, and she indicates levels of emotion, and other people on this call I know have animals, and you go, they have a lot of awareness, they have emotions, they get hurt, they get lonely, they get afraid. It's like, not much different than human beings. So beings, perhaps, have levels of emotion that have to be understood and appreciated. When you think of it, as I would, is emotions have been designed by the designer. And my belief is that God actually does produce a good product. And it's ever evolving. We're ever improving as we elevate our consciousness. So maybe emotions are an unbelievable gift to us. And all it requires of us, and it's not a small thing, but all it requires of us is understanding and appreciation. How can I use this amazingly designed and divinely designed gift of emotions in order to elevate my consciousness, to fulfill my life's purpose, to bring more love into existence in my relationships with whatever it is I put my attention on? It's like, oh, well, that's a cool way to think of it. I believe that some of the misunderstanding or the demonization or the fear of emotions occurs from maybe us not understanding how they ought to be used. Years ago, I had a mentor coach who explained to me his view of the difference between mature thinking and immature thinking. So, mature thinking is when a person consciously directs their thinking and makes a decision. This is a goal. This is what I have in mind. This is what I want to create in my life. And then takes action in the direction in order to progress in the achievement of that goal. So they take a decision. They make a decision. They take action. And then the emotions that they experience in this process, they use to either reinforce the actions they've been taking or to adjust the actions that they're taking. Now, they would have, depending on their higher or lower emotional state, the validity and the usefulness of their decision would be determined by that. But let's assume we're talking about you or me, and we're making from a elevated emotional state, a decision of what we want to achieve, what we want to accomplish, the good that we want to bring into the world. And we make a decision, then we take action in that direction, and the emotions we feel, that feels good, I'm so pleased, or I bump into a wall, and then we adjust our action. We don't adjust the decision, we adjust the action. Immature thinking, on the other hand, has a different sequence of those three items. A person has an emotion, and based upon that emotion, fear or anger or whatever it happens to be, even courageousness, that person is going to take action based upon what they're guided to do by that emotion. Then they take that action, and after the fact, they're going to make a decision about it. Oh, that was a mistake, or boy, aren't I cool, or it was somebody else's fault. So we'll take and make all kinds of interpretations and conclusions about the action we took that was motivated by the emotion that we initially felt. I could create this image, a schoolyard situation where two boys end up fighting. And we say to the boy, Joey, what happened? Billy made me mad. Emotion. And so I had to sock him right in the nose. Oh. And it was his fault. I mean, I was totally justified because I had these emotions come up. It's like, okay. Emotion, action, decision. And that's how we justify it. And Unfortunately, that scenario tends to produce a significant number of undesirable results instead of the other way around that we would have achieved or produced with mature thinking. There's a point of view that says emotions are a guidance system. They're our guidance system. So, yeah, what are they guiding us to? What is being guided to? Well, it depends on what you think is the purpose of life. Spiritual growth, or consumption of stuff, or any number of things. But if it doesn't feel good, you don't want to proceed in that direction. And really, what a lot of people do nowadays is, it doesn't feel good, I'm going to use some substance in order for me not to know that it doesn't feel good. It's like a painkiller. In certain situations, medically speaking, a painkiller is a good idea. I want to use a painkiller because of somebody broke an arm or a leg or post-surgery or something. You say, painkiller. You don't want to have those feelings. But those feelings are a little bit different than emotion. Emotion are the ones that I've described. And you say, oh, I'm afraid, so I have to take a substance to make me not feel this fear. In contemporary society, it has been known that people that drink alcohol, I'm in fear, and then they start drinking alcohol, and all of a sudden they want to get into a barroom fight and take on the world, or they misinterpret their power and potency, and it's like, wow, what just happened to that person? Well, they used a substance to try to overcome or mitigate or erase completely fear, because they thought fear was something to erase as compared to something to respond effectively to. It's like, oh, okay. I think there are ways to look at what these emotional states are actually indicating to us. Now, anybody who's driven a car understands that there are lights and other instrumentation providing feedback on the dashboard of a vehicle. It's like, oh yeah, I can tell how fast I'm going, I can tell how many RPMs the engine is running at, I can tell the heat in the radiator, I can tell the whether the battery is charging or discharging, I can tell if his tire pressure is right, I can tell if I need to change the oil or some other maintenance is due, or if there's some sort of real problem, then I'm going to see lights go on. We have a lot of instrumentation providing us feedback. I think we could look at emotions as that same type of feedback that our vehicle is providing to us. So the question becomes, if that were true, what would our instrumentation providing to us? Even shame, you could start at the lowest level, shame, which is really a mistaken belief that we are inherently broken, we are defective. We would have concluded that based upon previous experiences of producing undesirable results. Probably that feedback initially came from somebody else. But it's like, what could it really indicate to us if the red light of shame goes off on our dashboard? I would suggest at least we could say, expand my field of vision. It's not all about me. Let me, instead of just becoming so self-centered, so self-conscious that I'm the only thing in the universe that I'm even aware of, and unhappily so. Like, let me expand my vision. Let me start looking outwardly. Let me become other conscious. It's like, okay. How about apathy, depression, where we have a feeling that we're overwhelmed, it's too complicated, we could never learn this, do this, achieve this, whatever. Like, whoa, it's so hard, it's so difficult. It's like, wait a minute, that's one interpretation or one set. What if it meant take little bites, take little baby steps? This is not, you don't climb Mount Everest in a single leap. maybe you could if you're Superman or Superwoman, but for the rest of us, we need to take baby steps, little teeny baby steps. What steps can we take in any direction in order to advance toward our goal? We want to progress toward our goal, and it's like baby step, baby step, baby step. You want to learn a language? Decide on what language. Then what? Buy a book or figure out something out. You know, learning a language for dummies, or get a teacher, or buy a tape or a CD or something, right? Take a little teeny baby step, little baby step. But to take a baby step and or say, I want to learn a language, and then 5 minutes later beat ourselves up for not being fluent in this new language, like, unrealistic. I'll talk more about that in a while. We could look at grief, loss. Life has these experiences where we're going to experience grief. In fact, we're going to experience all of these 10 emotional states. Not a problem experiencing them. It's living in any one of these lower states that becomes a problem, because it blocks out other opportunities for awareness and progress and elevation of our consciousness. But let's take grief. What is grief? If we could get it to, for us to realize and to understand that, you know what? This, I'm talking about a change of state. I had it, I don't have it. He was here, or she was here, now he is not here, she is not here. Like, it's a change of state. It's a change, yep. And when I accept that change of state, I can then shift to having again. And let's say somebody died, and you go, I lost him. You could stay there, and you're going to experience grief. But if you recognize, that person changed state, they changed state, I get it. So now, let me have that person again, because I have memories, I have photos, I have experiences with that person, and I can dwell on the wonderful times that we had together, and I could see that person in an idealized way. So, in fact, I now have a relationship with that person again. So I can move. And grief could be the indication for us to come into that level of awareness. Fear. A lot of people think fear is slam on the brakes, slam on the brakes. I don't think so. I think we could look at fear as red light going on in the dashboard. A single word, fear, it might be a little bit more cumbersome to have get more information show up there. So instead, fear shows up. Fear. Get more information. It is an indication to our system that we need more information. We may have inadequate understanding of this situation or how to produce a desirable result. And one of the things now, if fear tends to get us to slow down, and really, that's what we want to do. For instance, if we're driving down the road and we run into a cloud bank, or it's dark, or it's a curve and we can't see what's ahead, we're going to want to slow down. We're going to want to slow down and get more information. That is, now our field of vision improves as we come around the corner or something in the mountains. And we go, yeah. But it also can give us an indication, you know what? I'm at the fork in the road. How important is it to me to do something? And if fear says, stop, then it obviously is not that important, or we haven't brought its importance into focus. I think this happens with people who think in terms of, I want to quit smoking, but I'm afraid of withdrawal, I'm afraid I'm going to eat, myself into being 500 pounds, I'm afraid I'm going to do this, I'm afraid of doing this, so they continue smoking. A lot of people don't quit smoking. They risk the health issues related to smoking cigarettes because they're afraid of putting on weight. It's like, it doesn't have to be either or. You know, smoking cigarettes is not really a good diet program. But we could look at it and say, how important is this to me? I think the idea next of looking at lust, which is an energy of craving, where we project a certain value onto some outside situation, person, substance, and go, I gotta have that, I gotta have that. But if we start to have those cravings, you know, it might be a good idea, instead of responding to that impulse and taking it at surface level that I gotta have it, it's like, wait a minute, I'm gonna slow down for a moment, I'm gonna think this through, and I'm gonna look beyond the thing that comes into my awareness as what I have to have, and look beyond that for the real thing that I want. What is the real thing that we want? It's not Snickers at 3:30 in the afternoon. We don't really want a Snickers. We want energy, because this is a natural low tide, if you will. There's an ebb of energy for people, rhythmically speaking, or biorhythms, in the afternoon. And this is not the time for a cigarette or a cup of Starbucks or Snickers. What is it? It's the time to draw in divine energy. We want energy. So if we took some time to activate ourselves, that is, walk around the block, do some deep breathing, do some stretching, jump up and down a few times, and re-energize the body, maybe because we've been sedentary or we've been involved in some activity for an extended period of time, and we feel like we've run our battery down, we don't need substances. We're divinely inspired. We're divinely powered. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah. Anger is battling, right? We want to, I call it an emotion of stop. I want to stop stuff. I want to stop things that are happening, or I want to stop something before it happens. But battling what is really, really difficult. It's a sunny day, and I don't want a sunny day, and you know, you can do a lot of battling of that, but it's not going to work. And we could battle what happened yesterday. It's not going to undo it. If we recognize that anger as the button showing up, flashing on our dashboard of our emotions, we turn around and go, oh, you know what? I want to focus on what I want to create. I want to create a better condition. That's a way easier than battling what is. I want to take this energy and direct it into the physically creating a better condition. I want to improve something. I don't want to battle something. I want to be constructive, not trying to be destructive, dealing with something that already exists. Pride. It's interesting, because this is marketed, you know, the pride, and they lure young men into the Marines this way. You want to be in pride, you want to be in pride. And it is pretty amazing what the Marines do specifically to create that sense of pride. Not necessarily wonderful, but they do it effectively. But that pride, in this context, could be the flashing light on the dashboard of our emotions saying, acknowledge your progress, then keep moving, don't settle there, I'm cool, I got this figured out. That is a slippery step. And you know, this idea that pride comes before the fall, my experience, it is so true, and I see it in clients, I've known it in my own experience. When you hear that, when you become so righteous, you're so convinced that you are more than 100% correct, and you want to go off on somebody and be unkind to something, whoa, you're going to win. That's a good time, not instead of keep moving, is reevaluate, look at all your underlying facts. Make sure you have your facts correct. Double check, triple check your facts and see what is happening. Instead of becoming really righteous and going off on people. So if you think in terms of this, now all of a sudden you go, wow, these emotions could be an incredible guide to me. They could be really, really happy. And enable me to be happy. Enable my judgments, my decision making, my actions to be so much more effective, and I can reinforce what I've decided to do. And if I need to adjust, then I'm going to get some feedback, and I can adjust my actions. But now, instead of trying to interfere with myself, this is really helpful. You know, before I talked about a guidance system, and guiding toward what? It's interesting to me as a golfer, I used to play golf, is when you really look at it, playing golf is really an issue of distance and direction. So, simply put, that's really what it is, distance and direction. You want to hit a golf ball a certain distance in a certain direction. If you can do that, you can have a real lot of fun playing golf. If you can't do that, you can have a real lot of frustration playing golf. So just think, distance and direction. Well, on a golf course, and also if you're driving a car, just imagine this. You're going to get in your car, and you're going to put your hand on the steering wheel, and you're going to put the car into drive. But before you do that, you have typically already decided on direction and distance. So I'm going to the grocery store. In our case, in Florida, we're less than a mile from the grocery store. We're going to go out of our development, make a series of lefts. We're going to be at the grocery store. And so we know that. So I've got my hands on the steering wheel. I've decided on distance direction. I'm going to go to the grocery store. But I've got to engage the engine. I think our emotions are essentially the engine to our bodies. We can achieve so much more if we're emotionally engaged. Now, that doesn't come as any new news to you or me. You're like, I don't want to do something. We're resistant. We have a foot on the brake. And you go, it's hard to get from point A to point B, right? No matter what that distance or direction is, because we are not trying to use our emotions to take us there, but in fact, we are putting our feet on the brakes, slowing us down, and any task is going to take so much longer when we have the brakes on. The brakes are one of these lower level emotions, and if I were to talk about courageousness, which is this level of enthusiasm, encouragement, I can't wait to discover this, I want to do this, it's going to be so interesting, I'm exploring, that is a very high vibration, very energized, very appealing to be around, because you want to contribute and support a person who's at that level, as compared to somebody who is sulking or resistant or angry, or you basically want to increase your distance between you and that person. You go, I get it. So distance and direction, and what powers us on this journey? Our emotions. If you were to think, and I do, of life as a journey, pretty much every activity is a trip within the overall journey, from, say, conception to exiting the body at physical death. That's the overriding journey. But if I were to say, going to the grocery store is a small journey within this all-encompassing journey, go, okay. You know, the joke about taking a trip with children in the car. You know, you're backing out of the driveway and you put the car in drive, and then you're down the block, and the kids are going, are we there yet? It's like, are we there yet? We even do that as adults. You know, are we there yet? Are we there yet? I think we can use these emotional states as milestones. I believe that it is natural and normal for us to go through those emotional states when we start a new project. You know, if you're, I'll say, 20 or above, maybe it doesn't, that's an arbitrary number, depending on our level of maturity and the way we think about stuff, is we're about to do something that we've been thinking about for a long time, right? We had a thought, but the action hasn't taken place. We made a decision, but we haven't taken action. And now we take action. One of the things we're first going to experience, I believe, on a regular basis in that scenario is shame. Oh, wow, why did I wait so long to learn this other language? Why did I wait so long to balance this checkbook? Why did I wait so long to call that person back? Why did I, right? So what's wrong with me? And then, because it's a milestone, we don't have to stay there very long. All we have to do is recognize it, acknowledge it, hop right up to apathy, which is, oh man, this is overwhelming. This is really complicated to learn another language. Oh, conjugation of verbs again? Subjunctive? Oh my goodness. Oh, this is, you know, and we're afraid our head is going to explode with the complexity. But, I know where I am. I'm having a sense of overwhelm, and it's just as temporary as I want it to be, or it's permanent. And people use those first couple of steps, and even some of the others I'm about to describe, as reasons to quit. Oh, it's never going to change. It's always going to be overwhelming. Oh, I'm always going to feel like I'm defective. No, not necessarily. It's just part of the progress on this journey. These are milestones. Hop up to the next one. Grief. Oh, I've lost so much fun and joy in my life not speaking this other language. Hop up to fear. I'm going to lose it. What if I don't ever learn this? It's hop up. Lust. I got to learn this. My whole life will be ruined if I don't learn this. Hop up. Why didn't they teach me this earlier? It's my parents' fault. It's the school's fault. It's you name it, where we're going to be in anger. You know, we're going to want to stop the whole educational system, and then we hop up to pride. We can finally put several words together in a sentence, you know. And we go, I totally got this figured out. I know how to pronounce these words. I know how to pronounce the alphabet in this language. Oh, I'm really, really cool. Hop up one more step. Hop up one more step to courageousness, which is the best place to be trying to learn anything, do a new project. You go, oh, yeah, we're going to be so much better when we're on that, because it's all about discovery, and we're not thinking in terms of pain or embarrassment or humiliation. We're going to be thrilled with this process, and then we'll be up sometime at acceptance and peace. So clearly, those things are very, very high-level states of emotion. Be nice to be there at certain times, but I think settling for courageousness as a regular place from which to engage is really a great way to move energy and to get other people to contribute to bringing your ideas and goals into physical manifestation. And you have a lot of access to divine energy because of your openness to this process. You know, there's some confusion about people's misbehavior, as I was talking about before, with regard to the immature thinking drives us to operate on emotions. But I think we could look at the ego as well as being part of this process that complicates our lives. If I look at the ego that says, you know, as the way Christ describes it in Christ Returns, reveals startling truth. The ego expresses these four driving needs through the personality: defend ourselves from criticism and emotional and physical attack. You know, and the ego is necessary. It is really a force that is trying to get us to maintain our individuality. It could be an advisor to our efforts to maintain our individuality, or it can also be a dictator that overrides any kind of common sense and thoughtfulness toward any other person. So the ego is trying to do the defending of from criticism, emotional, physical attack. Will do anything, honestly or dishonestly, in order for us to arrive in first in the race of life. You know, we're going to do things so we can do that and achieve that. Think of Lance Armstrong cheating to win the Tour de France those many times. Like, wow. And then lying about it time after time after time. It's like, oh, man, wow. Then the third thing is to take what's best for ourselves without the regard for anybody else. And another sports celebrity that I think of in terms of this wanton taking for the self is Tiger Woods. He's married, has children, and is out, I'll say whoring, promiscuous, without any regard to the commitment he made to his wife or his children, frankly, to his profession, to his status in the world. Just wants to take and take and take and take and take the energy of all the females he was involved with. It's like, how destructive. And destroyed the career, maybe permanently, of a man who could have been the greatest golfer of all time. And then to hold on to possessions, the fourth driving need. Hold on to money, property, possessions, things, family, friends, and what we will do to defend those things. And you hear of it commonly expressed through NIMBY, right? Not in my backyard. You know, you can do whatever, you can put a shelter for the homeless or an AIDS clinic anywhere you want, but not in my backyard. I don't want my property values destroyed. I don't want my life to be changed by the needs of other people. And you just go, wow. Those things can be empowered by some of the emotions, but they're different. The ego and the emotions, in my thinking, are different. I want to defend my space. It is natural and normal, and the ego wants me to do it, and it'll do it instinctively. You know, if you push me, my first reaction is to push you back. When driving down the highway, and I bet you've experienced this too, is you're driving down the highway, you're in the middle lane, and all of a sudden, without even becoming aware of it, something has caused you to veer to the right because the car on your left-hand side is kind of swerving or, you know, encroaching on your space around you and your car. We do that. It's like, whoa, I didn't even realize it. It wasn't a thought process. It was an automatic ego protection of our individuality, defending our space, trying to keep us alive. You go, ooh, that's cool. And when I think of what we could say ego, or rather the emotions are, I would say, you know what, if I want to achieve anything, as I was describing before, this metaphor of the car, I want to engage my emotions. I want to be emotionally connected to it. And if I'm not, then I know I'm not going to really progress very far in that particular direction. And, you know, so maybe it's like the spark that sets our goals on fire, or keeps us going, keeps us fueled, keeps that fire going. When we take an action, oh, I feel good about that. Vroom, vroom, the fire increases. And so that sort of thing continues. We can use emotions to help us to achieve what we want if we recognize it's a necessary element to our achievement. But emotions and ego are vastly misunderstood. You know, even the word love, I feel love. I feel love for you. I feel love for you. And I would say, let's differentiate that statement. A person says, oh, I love you. And girls have heard that expression and have expressed it. If it means your well-being is of utmost important to me, it's so important to me, I would say, okay. And if there is attention and respect and appreciation, I would say, okay, that sounds like love. That sounds like love. But if it's really ego-driven, it's, I want to possess you. And I think, of course, as a male, a teenage boy or young adult is like, yeah, that is the open sesame word that we're trying, but it's not about love. It's about taking energy, about acquiring something of another that we think will make us more. So we're constantly seeking to acquire energy, and this is normal, this is natural. All of us do it, all living beings do it, and it's not a problem, but it is what powers that acquisition of energy. The decision to acquire energy and then the steps or the actions we take to it, we can quickly define, And if we run into people who are using emotions almost like cattle prods, you know, they're poking us and they're trying to induce pain, guilt, regret, shame, grief, anything else in order to get us to stop our behavior and do something else. And you can hear it in people. I hear it in clients. I hear it in clients that are trying to use guilt. Oh, I'm so disappointed in your company. And I'm thinking, oh, I know this was a strategy. I don't want them to be disappointed. However, you and I already recognize disappointment is in the eye of the beholder, just like so many other things perceptually. It's a creation of that individual. So rather than allow ourselves to be manipulated about it, if we can understand how other people are using emotions to influence us, just like we use emotions to influence them, and how our emotions are being used by us to influence us, all of a sudden we really, you know what? I'm much more aware. I'm much more aware of this whole concept of energy called emotions that can really be so creative, so constructive, so helpful, if we can be aware of them. And I think if we know what emotions can be and the potential for them being used in our lives, we're going to be in such a better place to use our emotions to create the lives we want instead of being used by them. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is a pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8. In Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.